Hello, and welcome to Paganology, a podcast where we will be talking about paganism, folklore, witchcraft, and dark history. I am your host, Ashley, and together we will be diving into the magical, secret, and ancient pagan realm. I first want to say thank you to all the positive comments and feedback from the last episode. It truly, truly means a lot to me. As well, I got a lot of positive comments about food folklore, so that is something that I will definitely look into more and talk about more for everyone. So if you did like it, tune in again soon because I will be doing more episodes on food folklore. And I also hope that everyone had a good Ostara or a good spring, depending on how you celebrate and honor it. This winter has been very odd here. I live in one of the coldest city capitals in the world, and it's pretty common for our winters to be about, you know, minus 30 degrees Celsius. But this year, we barely grazed minus 20. This is clearly the effect of global warming. There's no denying that, that's for sure. And for example, the last week of February, we hit plus 15 degrees Celsius, which is unheard of. I've never seen it that warm in February, ever. The snow completely melted until today. We had some snow overnight, but when I'm saying snow, it's like maybe 2 centimeters, and it's already melting, so it's definitely not going to last. And let me tell you, I am ready for spring. I love winter. It is truly probably one of my favorite seasons, but I am definitely ready for spring. I already have some of my garden flowers, my spring flowers already popping up. So now that it's showing the signs of spring, I'm really excited for it. And this change of season really got me thinking and diving into some spring folklore. And I wanted to find new ways to honor the changing of the seasons. While doing my research and a lot of reading, one thing I did notice across the board is that this time of the year is a rebirth season. In many different cultures, religion, and spiritual paths, it is clearly a rebirth season. I mean, we just had Ostara, and in the Christian religion, Easter is coming up very quickly. And both are really filled with rebirth symbolism and messages. I mean, everyone pretty much knows the story about Jesus. I mean, this is when, you know, he is risen, the whole story behind that. And for the symbolism as well, we have eggs and bunnies and baby everything, you know, baby lamb, baby rabbits, baby everything. So it is clearly about rebirth and new life and all that fun stuff. But I wanted to go deeper than Ostara and really look into spring specific folklore. And the stories that I will be telling you today, you know, do have that symbolism as well, but I found it very interesting about how far back we can get these stories and even the symbolism being present back then. So I have a few tales to tell you today. My deep dive into spring mythology brought me as far back as ancient Egypt. Now, there are many Egyptian gods and goddesses, but there is one story that I completely forgot about because, yes, like all kids who watch The Mummy and The Mummy Returns, I got obsessed with everything Egyptian at one point in my life. Also, this story has always been interesting to me because I've always been a fan of a good murder mystery, and this one is definitely probably the original murder mystery story. And that story is the murder of Osiris. And because there are so many gods and goddesses in ancient Egypt, I will just first briefly explain who Osiris is before we get into the story. Osiris is probably one of the most important gods in ancient Egypt. And I'm talking about, you know, we're talking about 2400 BCE, if in terms of chronology and everything. Osiris played a bit of a double role. He was both a god of fertility and the embodiment of the dead and the resurrected king. So he had a bit of two roles in ancient Egypt, and this dual role was seen as divine, and in turn, it meant divine kingship. This meant that when the kings died, they would become Osiris, who is the god of the underworld, and then the dead king's son, the new living king, was then identified with Horus, the god of the sky, which means that Osiris and Horus were father and son. If you take anything away about the history of ancient Egypt, is that divinity was really important to them in life and in death. I mean, it was so important to them that they even built these massive structures that became part of the wonders of the world, you know, the pyramids. You know, it was really, really important to them that you were good in life and good after death as well. I can go on forever about that, but I'm going to go back to Osiris. But honestly, if you want to learn more about ancient Egypt and the gods and goddesses, it is honestly very interesting, and I highly recommend looking into it more if that's something that does interest you. But yes, Osiris, there is the connection between rebirth, resurrection, and spring when it comes to Egypt, and it has to do with the murder of Osiris. And like I said, I love a good murder mystery, and this one is definitely interesting. Osiris was murdered by his like arch rival Seth, who tore his body to pieces, 14 to be exact, and scattered the parts across Egypt. Pretty intense, right? The goddess Isis and her sister Nepho searched and found all of the pieces and buried them, except for the phallus, which gave new life to Osiris. And then Osiris would go on to stay in the underworld as a ruler and judge. And his son, Horus, successfully fought against Seth and became the new king of Egypt. So that is where we get the god of the underworld and the god of the sky. Osiris's death and rebirth speak to that dual role as the fertility god who gave life to new plants and vegetation while controlling things like the annual flooding of the Nile. Over time, festivals were held in his honor, and as I said, you know, ancient Egypt was really, really keen on gods and goddesses and ensuring that they were always worshipped, basically, and it was no different with Osiris. But this is where it gets a little bit morbid. So, at these festivals that were held in his honor, they would reenact the god's fate, basically putting on plays to honor him and reenact that murder that he went through. These festivals were held every year across Egypt. Also, one of the interesting things that I found, and it brings back to the idea of spring and all that, is there was actually something called the Osiris Garden, which consisted of a mold in the shape of Osiris, and it was filled with soil. They would then water the soil with the water from the Nile, and then grain would be planted in it. Once and if the grain sprouted, it was said that Osiris would bless the lands with fertile soil and it would mean there'd be a prosperous growing season. And if grain didn't sprout, well, it meant that Osiris was not happy with them and they would continue to worship and try and turn that around. But it often meant that maybe there wasn't a good growing season. As an avid gardener myself, I found this very interesting. I do tend to stick more towards the Nordic and Celtic gods and goddesses, but I found the story of Osiris very interesting when I decided to dive back into it because I honestly completely forgot about this story. Perhaps as a gardener myself, I may have to start honoring Osiris because, you know, I definitely want my garden to be prosperous, and last year it definitely was not, so maybe I gotta, you know, look into Osiris a little bit more. But yeah, that is the story of Osiris. Isn't his murder wild though? The fact that, you know, his body pieces were, you know, torn apart and scattered across Egypt. You know, imagine having to like search for that. And the fact that they buried everything except for the phallus, which I found it very interesting that that was left behind. I don't know. Again, a lot of symbolism about birth and spring and all that stuff, but yeah, isn't that story wild? Now, if you are thinking if I'm going to talk about a specific story that is very much rooted in spring, yes, I am definitely going to be talking about it. And that is the story of Hades and Persephone. I am going to fully admit that I am a huge fan of Persephone and Hades. The myth of Hades and Persephone is probably one of the best and well-known of the Greek myth, and even potentially one of the most well-known best stories of all time. But for those of you who don't know the story, I'm going to go through it for you. So the key players are Hades, and he was the brother of Zeus, as well as the famous god of the underworld. And Persephone was the daughter of Demeter, the goddess of nature. Demeter had beautiful daughters, and everyone was in love with them. They thought they were the most beautiful things on the planet. And this was also true for Hades. When he saw Persephone, he fell in love with her and head over heels in love with her. It was truly love at first sight, but then it gets kind of creepy in the sense that he then confides in his brother Zeus to basically kidnap her and bring her to the underworld. Like a lot of Greek and Roman stories, there is always a bit of questionable things about them, and this is definitely one of them, falling in love with a woman and kidnapping her. There are some issues behind that story, but hear me out. Let's continue with the story. Now, depending on which version you hear, Demeter was either there with her when this happened, but essentially Demeter and Persephone descended on Earth and were frolicking in nature. Persephone was interacting with the nymphs and the nature surrounding her, and then she kind of went off on her own because daffodils were planted there by Gaia, who was following the orders of Zeus. The goal was to enchant Persephone and attract her away from her mom and the nymphs and anyone who was essentially watching her and get her completely alone. Once she was alone, with the help of Pluto, the ground opened up below her and she fell to the underworld. She was then forced to marry Hades, and then she was stuck in the underworld for the rest of her life. When she fell to the underworld, Earth basically started dying. All the plants went dormant, and nothing was growing anymore. Everything was just dying and decaying. Persephone was absolutely devastated. She was so upset, and I mean, who wouldn't be when you are kidnapped and brought to the underworld for the rest of your life, right? But Hades noticed this and he loved her so much and he hated seeing her so miserable, so he decided to come up with another plan. Not to mention, Demeter was still up on Earth, scorching it and raging, and she was so angry that her daughter was kidnapped that she was taking it out on Earth. Which, is fair. I mean, your daughter just got kidnapped, so by all means, you are definitely going to be raging, right? And at the same time, Zeus was no longer happy because Earth is being destroyed by Demeter and no one is happy anymore, so things definitely had to change. So Zeus and Hades met up and had a good chat, and they decided that Persephone would be allowed to come back to Earth part-time, but there is definitely a catch. Before leaving the underworld, Persephone had to eat 4 seeds of a pomegranate. Why, might you ask? Well, in ancient mythology, to eat the fruit of one's captor meant that one would have to return to that captor or country. A little bit weird, but okay. And the pomegranate was definitely a symbol of Hades during this time. So she had to eat 4 seeds of the pomegranate, and then she would be allowed to return to Earth to spend time with her mother and to be on Earth and frolic in nature and all that fun stuff. But then she would have to return to the underworld and be with Hades for the rest of the year. And by allowing her to do this, she actually fell in love with Hades even more, and they became the ultimate couple in Greek mythology. This made her happy. She was a maiden of Earth, but then also the goddess of the underworld, So she was very happy with this arrangement and ultimately fell in love with Hades. This is linked to spring because when Persephone comes to Earth, it's springtime and summer, and then when she descends to Hades, it is fall and winter. Now, I am fully aware that there are many, many, many issues to this story. Just like the other Greek mythology stories, there is that underlying abuse messaging to it. And ultimately, in this situation as well, it's very Stockholm syndrome-like. Persephone does fall in love with her captor, but it also has that messaging of if you love something, let's set it free, and if it comes back, it's meant to be. That is definitely what Hades did because he loved her so much. But ultimately, Zeus kind of told him to because Demeter was scorching the earth and destroying it, so he didn't want that to happen either. So, there are some issues with the story, but I do love the story of Persephone and Hades. As I have mentioned, I don't usually sway away from Nordic or Celtic stories or traditions, with one exception, and that is Persephone. I do little rituals for her in the spring as well as the winter, or I guess the fall. But yeah, I do like Persephone. I do like her story. So yeah, that is the story of Persephone and Hades. I do find it interesting, as you're probably aware. But there are other stories out there that are very much rooted in spring mythology, and some of them are pretty wild. And just a sidebar moment, if it sounds a bit different, I literally had a complete meltdown with my microphone. It just started sounding super echoey. I even uninstalled and reinstalled the software that I use. I don't know what happened, but my audio sounds a bit different now, so. Mercury retrograde starts tomorrow, April 1st. I'm just finishing up the recording today on the 31st. And honestly, every single time technology messes up with me. So I am fully blaming that at this point. Like every single time technology messes up with me on Mercury retrograde, I don't know what it is, but yeah, I was literally just sitting here recording and one segment, started the next, and it sounded completely different. I didn't do any changes, no effects, no nothing, and it was just super echoey. I have no idea. I have no explanation for it. Yeah. If you like these stories and you find them very interesting, there are others you can look into, and they are wild. Another good one associated with spring is the story of Cybele and Attis. It is a pre-Christian story that takes place in the Roman Empire, and it actually takes place in modern-day Turkey. Attis was the god of fertility, and as the legend goes, was sent mad and castrated himself under a pine tree just before his wedding to Cybele, you know, as one does before they get married to somebody. Long story short, Attis was resurrected and represents the crops and the fruits that die off in the winter and return in the spring. And very similar to the story of Osiris, there is a festival in their honor called the Cybele Festival. And a pine tree was decorated with violets, the flowers that grew from the blood of Attis under the pine tree when he castrated himself. It is definitely a wild story and very similar to the one of Osiris. So if that one interested you, this is another good one that you can look into. There is another story that takes place in summer, which is in modern day southern Iraq. And that one is about the goddess of fertility, love, and war and sex, and that is the goddess Inanna or Ishtar, depending on which story you follow. Again, long story short, she tried to gain control of the underworld from her sister. It did not go well, and she was killed and transformed into a piece of meat. Yep, a piece of meat. When she was resurrected, she asked her young lover to take her place in the underworld. Sure, there are many more. I did find these ones super interesting, and I don't want to do a full episode on ancient mythology. I mean, I could, and there would be some fun spring folklore in there. But there is other spring folklore that I would like to tell you about before we wrap up this episode. Like the green and kitchen witch that I am a sucker for weather folklore and old wives' tales. I actually live by them. Like honestly, like everything about my gardening life is about weather folklore and old wives' tales. For spring, there is one big one, and that is April showers bring May flowers. And I'm guessing every single one of you have heard that at some point in your life. And there is some truth to it. If it is rainy in April, May will be more prosperous and more green. That is definitely true. Water does help with the growth of plants. We saw that when the Nile flooded in Osiris's story, and it holds true to any gardener. Any gardener will tell you that it is very important for it to be a wet April. Unless, of course, you are in Canada. This week, apparently, we're getting another 20 centimeters of snow. I don't really believe it, and I just took off my winter tires on my car, so I'm hoping that's not the case. But if you are in Canada, you know that you can still get snow in May. I wish I was joking, but it has happened. So our gardening season tends to be from June to October, which is really hard for me this year because we haven't had snow in about a month. Like my garden beds have been exposed now for about a month, so it's really tempting to go out there and start gardening. But again, we're getting potentially 20 centimeters of snow this week, and there is still that risk of frost. So I gotta tame myself and not go out there. But if you are an avid gardener like myself, or you are learning about green witchcraft, or you are trying to work on your green thumb, there are some weather folklore and expressions that you should be mindful of this time of the year. Some of them are, if it thunders on All Fool's Day, it brings good crops of corn and hay. I'm going to say this right now, a lot of them do rhyme. So if you're not someone who likes rhymes, I'm so sorry. Next one is, if it thunders in February, there will be frost in May. And this one is interesting because we actually had a thunderstorm in February. So I'm very hesitant to do anything outside until June this year because, you know, I believe this stuff. I believe there's going to be frost in May. So I'm going to hold off. The next one is, if the oak is out before the ash, then we are in for a splash. But if the ash is out before the oak, we are in for a soak. So this one is referring to the trees. If the oak tree is out before the ash tree, we're going to get little water this year. But if the ash is out before the oak, it means it's going to be a rainy season. So personally, I'm hoping for a rainy season because we had many forest fires last year. So I'm really hoping that, you know, we are in for a lot of rain this year. But yeah. Next one is, when April blows its horn, then it stands good with hay, rye, and corn. And this means if there's a lot of wind, it's going to be a good season for hay, rye, and corn. A cold and moist April fills the cellar and fattens the cows. This one I actually heard from one of my grandmothers many, many years ago. And basically, if it's a cooler April, that means your winter cold crops will be very prosperous. So it's going to fill the cellar, meaning you are going to get, you know, turnips and potatoes and carrots and peas, beans, all that fun stuff. So you will have a good milking season if you are into the dairy industry. My family were in the line of dairy farmers. Basically, when my family arrived in Canada, they, you know, started having a dairy farm, and that dairy farm was in my family for almost 200 years. Cousins did sell it though, so unfortunately the dairy farm is no longer in our family, which is a little bit sad, you know, because it was so important for my family when they arrived in Canada. But the dairy industry has changed so much over the years, but I digress. I'm so sorry. And I don't even consume dairy. So, and again, this wasn't my direct family. It was like a family farm. So it was my cousins who owned it, and like everyone worked on it at some point in their life. And yeah, again, I digress. I'm so sorry. So the last one that I will mention is, a dewy morning brings good haying day. Again, these are old folklore expressions or old wives' tales, which I found very interesting. You know, most people are not, you know, growing hay in their backyard. So some of them don't apply to the most modern day gardener, but I did find them very interesting, and I do love a good folklore, a good old wives' tale. My grandmother had a really good one also, and hers was, if you see a cow laying down in a field, it means rain is coming. When she told me that years ago, I didn't believe her because, you know, cows lay down in the fields all the time, you know? But every time I did see them laying down, it always rained. So I guess there was some truth to it. I don't know. But I still use that expression now today, and it tends to hold true. So that's one thing you can look for when you're driving in the country and you see some cows laying down. If it rains, chances are it's because they were laying down in the field. I am really hoping spring is going to be beautiful. I am a little bit worried it's going to get hot very quickly. We already have fire bans in the area, which is a little bit concerning because we don't normally get fire bans in March. It's normally full of snow, so that's a little bit concerning. As I mentioned, we have not had snow for quite some time, and the songbirds have been back for several weeks now already, also, as well as the geese. So, you know, I've never seen songbirds back in March, at least not for a very long time. It's very unusual for that. So I'm suspecting this spring is going to be beautiful, but I feel that by the end of May, we're going to be hitting the 30 degrees again, which is a little worrisome given last summer there was insane forest fires, not too close to me, but close enough that we got the smoke and we couldn't even use the outdoors because it was so smoky and hard to breathe. So I'm really hoping that is not the case again this year. Not to mention last summer we had, quite a few tornadoes and a lot of tornado risks pretty much every single day. So I'm really hoping that is not the case again for this year. But to ensure that, being, the green witch that I am, the kitchen witch that I am definitely going to do some rituals to the nature gods and goddesses. I'm going to maybe look into Osiris and Persephone and anyone and everyone I can think of to try and make sure this year is a prosperous year and not full of forest fires. To mention, being of Celtic descent, I may have to talk to the Fae, because they are the ones definitely protecting the land. And even though I try not to do anything with the Fae, given all the superstitions from my grandmother over the years, yeah, something has to be done, in my personal humble opinion. I really hope you liked today's episode. That is a wrap. I always thank you all for joining me and tuning in for the episode. It greatly means a lot to me. And I am very excited for the next episode, and I can't wait for you guys to hear it. But until then, if you have any weather folklore or some spring mythology or spring myths that you'd like me to know about, please send me a message or tag me on Instagram. I love things like this, so I cannot wait to hear from you. I want to thank you for listening to today's episode. If you like what you heard and you want to support me, please like and follow this podcast on the platform you are listening from. Your support means so much to me. If you have any questions, comments, or episode suggestions, or if you just want to have a quick chat with me, you can follow me over on Instagram at Paganology Podcast. You can also use the hashtag Paganology Podcast to tag me in things. And you can also email me at paganologypodcast@gmail.com. I will see you in the next episode. Stay safe. Be kind to each other, but for now, friends, merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again. This podcast is recorded on unceded Algonquin Anishinaabe territory. Paganology is written, recorded, and edited by me, Ashley H.